Let's get right to it this hour as we welcome to the program nationally syndicated columnist of the Chicago Tribune and over 200 other newspapers. You hear her as well on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And she's also the author of a wonderful new book called Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home. Amy Dickinson, welcome into downtown this afternoon.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. So can we do a temperature check? Because I'm in upstate New York, and we think it's pretty chilly right now.
I think we are, 13 maybe? Let's check right outside. 14 degrees.
Oh, it looks like we're about the same. We got some nice snow last night, too, so it's real twinkly.
Well, by the way, speaking of that, after reading the book, I hope you're getting a kickback from the Freeville, New York Chamber of Commerce because you make it sound like such a wonderful place to live.
Oh, no. You know, people always tell me that, and that's when I realize how often we layer on our own sort of dreams, visions, and feelings, especially about small towns, because Little Freeville, where I am right now, where I grew up, is not a cute little, it's not the Gilmore Girls, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and Maine is full of towns like this.
Oh, yes.
And upstate New York is full of towns like this, and Vermont is full of towns like this. And I live in one of those little villages where you drive through and you look around and you think, well, what are these people doing here? You know, like, why?
Well, they're living lives of, I think, great beauty and complexity.
As it turns out, that's exactly what we're doing, isn't it? And that's why I remember when I first wanted to write a memoir, and I spoke to my agent, and I said, like, now, what? Like, I'm not a heroin addict. I haven't had, you know, these super, super dramatic things happen. Now, who wants to read a book about an sort of an ordinary person? And she said, everyone.
Well, yeah, because you have dealt with the challenges, the struggles, the highs and the lows that so many people have. And a big part of the book talks about what it was like being a single mom for quite some time. And that's not easy, but it certainly is something that so many people can relate to.
Yeah, actually, and what I hear most often about this book is how relatable it is because, you know, I think people have this idea about advice givers. I certainly probably had this idea about Ann Landers, you know, or Dear Abby. This notion that people who give advice lead lives that are sort of twinkly and perfect. And what I really wanted to do was to pull back the curtain on that and show people what an ordinary life I actually do lead. But it's like anybody else's life. It's full of incident because if you live in a family, you're surrounded by drama and heartbreak and hilarity and everything in between.
Well, and one of the things you say in the book is that why you feel like you're able to give advice to people is because you've lived through many of the same experiences that they often ask about.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's this quote I love, Erik Erikson, the famous psychologist or psychiatrist. There's a quote from him that I really love, and it says, experience is for me the best teacher. And I think that any of us, if we are paying attention, can learn the most really from the lessons delivered by our own lives and our own experiences. But you have to really pay attention.
We're talking with Amy Dickinson here on Downtown. One of the parts of the book I enjoyed so much was following the courtship with you and your now husband, Bruno. And there are challenges that, the idea of finding love later on, a second time in life, is rife with challenges. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, and I mean, it was quite something really stepping into what I think of as the plot of a Hallmark movie. You know, it's like this, I had been single. I had been a single mom for almost 20 years. And when I moved back to my little hometown, I moved to Freeville from Chicago to take care of my mother at the end of her life. And I hired somebody to renovate the house, and in walked Bruno. And in the book, I describe it like John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara in The Quiet Man, you know. It was really quite shocking. The best part in some ways of that whole story is that I was very happy and prepared to live my life without a partner. And I was really good with that. And I'm not saying that, like, oh, the universe delivered, you know, right when I least expected it. But it was more like over many, many years, I realized I had gotten good at leading my own life, making my own decisions, forming my own friendships. And I truly was, I mean, I, you know, went through periods of feeling quite lonely for a partner, but I was definitely feeling pretty good about my own life. And that's, I think, important.
And who knew that his decision to simply not go for a walk with you might lead to where you are now?
I know. He really, Bruno played kind of hard to get, can I say? You know, it was, but, you know, we were two sort of over-the-hill, middle-aged plus people, and he was really wary. I had simply had much more experience, frankly, in relationships than he had, and I think I saw the stakes a little differently than he did. But yeah, no, he played really hard to get.
Now the compliment he gave you was, if I remember it right from the book, was that you're reliable.
I know. Imagine that. How romantic.
But he seems like the most reliable man. I'm in love with Bruno from reading the book. He's a rock.
He is the doll. Look, Bruno and I both grew up on dairy farms. He is one of 13 children. And there's a fact when you're farming, you have to show up and do the milking, you know? And so I think Bruno and I are both, and look, I think if you asked anybody, reliability really is a core value for a lot of people, because if you're reliable, it means that people can count on you, you know? And so I was a little shocked when he delivered this as some kind of on a romantic platter. But then when I thought about it, I realized that, like, that is really important to him and to me. And what do you know, after we got married, my reliability was really, really, really put to the test, because I entered into a family with 4 new stepdaughters. All in the throes of adolescence. There was a lot of door slamming. There was a lot going on.
Also, I thought an incredibly poignant aspect of the book was talking about your mother, the late days of her life, her passing, and then your struggle to deal with the grief that followed that. Was it cathartic in any way for you to write about those times?
I have to say, it was incredibly cathartic, but it did not... one of the points I make in my chapters about my mother and about her death and grieving, one of the points I make is that, for me anyway, closure is a total crock. And it was incredibly important for me to write about her and to write about my experience with her. And I think this is the experience a lot of those of us sort of nearing 60 are dealing with. Children, on the one hand, needing us, our elderly parents needing us. You know, millions of Americans relocate at this stage of life to be with elderly parents. And so it's a very common experience. But I was not prepared for the loss, even though I was there. You know, you think you're ready. But I was not prepared for it, and I still feel it. I'm so happy I wrote about it. It was so hard to write. Oh, that chapter took me a month to write.
Oh, I'm sure. And I love what you say about family as well, that it's about surrendering to the moments that are out there and just embracing, I think you put it, those fleeting moments when everyone is healthy and happy.
Exactly. Any of us who have been through, you know, if you are involved with people, then that means that you will get hurt because you or they will get sick or something will happen. And yes, I have definitely, I've always been somebody who sort of liked to look at the sunshine and all that. But I, even more, I'm so grateful for just those everyday events. You know, I'm in our little village choir and we're practicing for a Christmas cantata. And I have to say, there's nothing more beautiful than a ragtag group of rusty singers practicing for Christmas. You know, it's a very timeless experience, and that sort of thing makes me incredibly happy.
So what says home to you, Amy? Is it that sense of place, or is it the people in it, or can they even be separated?
You know, for me, because my family has lived literally in on the same land for since 1790, really, I think they're very, very intertwined, the people and the place. And one of the reasons I was very happy to write this book is, in some ways, it really is, it's a thank you note to the people who helped to raise me. You know, the people I went to high school with, their parents, the guys that run our grocery store, you know, just these good people who I've been lucky enough to know.
We're talking with Amy Dickinson. Her new book is entitled Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things. Do your friends ask you advice, or do they just say, oh, that's Amy, she's not going to help us?
You know, I don't like to really offer unsolicited advice. And I think that people, one thing I can do, honestly, after 15 years of doing this job, I can definitely point people to resources, but I really try not to leap in unless somebody seeks me out. And the fact is, people do seek me out, and friends do occasionally ask me, oh, in fact, just today, somebody called me up and asked me, oh, this person wants this big favor, I'm not sure. And I said, here's how to say no to that, you know? Because that, you know, I've gotten more practiced at a lot of these techniques over the years.
It's the holiday season, always a time of stress for everybody. My wife, my son, and I just moved to a new house. For any situation people are in, what's the best way to enjoy the holidays? Because we have to get some advice out of you while you're here.
Oh, well, and I love this topic, actually. You know, for me, it's to do things and to try to remember to do things. And that means go ice skating, go caroling or listen to carolers, or go to your community's tree lighting, or, you know, it's for me, the most memorable moments are those when I have done something Christmassy. But it's hard. It's like we're so busy, we forget to do those things.
Now, we're asking all of our guests here this week if they have a favorite Christmas song. Is there one tune? You mentioned you're in the choir. Is there a song that just says Christmas to you?
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It's not a carol, but I love it so much.
And I not only love the song, I love the movie, too. Meet Me in St. Louis.
Incredible. Incredible.
Well, Amy, the book is so good. We love your work on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And, of course, Ask Amy. It's a real delight for us to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Such a pleasure. Thanks.
And we wish you and Bruno and the extended family a wonderful holiday season.
Same to you. Thank you.